session number 14976, Joseph Weir, Reel 5.
Mr. Weir, Reel 5. What did you do to keep yourselves interested in the sense of leisure? It was very dull up there. Did you organise any sports at all?
Well, once again, we had the rival football match between the Signals and the well, they call them Bugler section then, it became the Achac section later, which was always a man for a great game, great fun. I remember that day we played for a pound a man, which was a fortune. But there was nothing else to do with money. But Joe said no gambling, nothing else to do but sit and play cards in these tents. And because of the company soldiers were on guard, you know, when and because the Signals were all sent to they were with their companies, you know. And
was there any training or manoeuvres going on?
Well, no, there was very little training then. We did, as far as I'm concerned, there was very little training done in the Iraq. I mean, the sun was shining, but it was, I mean, you couldn't, your feet were frozen through the snow. I mean, you know, we just have all that he cured in MDS, so there was no extra clothing.
How do you keep yourselves clean?
I often wonder that.
Do you have any washing facilities?
I don't think we had anything like that in MDS. I don't know how we got, I can't remember, but I don't think we had anything like that at all.
Mm. How long were you there?
Well, we weren't very long. We left in January. And very pleased to get down. Of course, we went straight down and we stopped at Haifa. I usually keep myself clean. I think we're all in the sea very quick. Very, very quick. Because the orange groves were there, you know, so naturally we all had a couple of oranges or so. And some of our lads would set the guard orange groves to stop the lads getting in, but I remember months and months, that was in, as they say, January. And the beginning of June, I remember the CSM at the time, RSM Page, marvellous man, marvellous. And he got an MC, RSM, and he came in his tent. He says, "I smell oranges." He says, "Don't tell me you buggers have had oranges all the time we've been up here and we had." he couldn't get over it, but he was a great man. And I had a little novel thing. I got issued with a new pair of boots in Iraq. Well, they were like patent leather. They were beautiful, soft as could be. And this RSM says, "I'm going to have them boots off you." I had to finish. I had to give them a piece, get an ordinary pair, you know. And he took it because, I mean, they were ideal for him because, oh, they were a beautiful pair of shoes. And I got these new shoes and I got a new rifle and it was white as could be. And he says, "I'll have that off, you know." And he got my rifle in my boots. I told him, but poor soul, I think he got killed.
You said he was a great man. In what ways was he great?
I mean, he was, you know, on duty, he was a real sergeant major. But off, you know, like off duty, he would have a crack with you, and you could talk to him. Funny thing, in Iraq, he'd come into the Signals tent one night and somebody had passed flatus, and it was an awful smell. And he come in and he ran out and he come back and threw a toilet roll into the tent. You know, that was the sort of, you know, that he was. And he had your welfare at heart, that RSM. He's a real RSM with a tash and everything. And, if you want to talk to him, you can go up and talk to him. Mm-hmm. I think everybody, like myself, thought him a great man. Mm-hmm. He's the first man that I saw firing a Bren gun off his shoulder, you know, to a plane, you know, like that. First man I ever saw doing that. So as I say, about a few days at Haifa, then.
Did you know you were going to the desert?
When you were going to the desert.
How did you feel? It's obviously this was warfare and you were going to go into action at some point.
Yes, well, there had been, before we got there, there'd been up to Benghazi, got pushed back again. And that was the line we were going to. Well, we were just said we're going to the Tobruk area, you know. And, but the change, you remember, from coming from the winter and going into the desert was, you know, how you didn't get a death of cold. People, you know, it was really, because it happened that sudden. I mean, and we had to, went to, I was still with headquarters at that time, still headquarters, and the lads were out of their companies once we got the desert to get sent, and that was one of the things that happened. We had our good transport, we had to give to an Indian division, and we got their rubbish, and it was, it was weird past its best. And yeah, we had, we got to the desert, and I was just in a little 1500 weight truck, and it broke down. And they just said the mechanic would catch up. We had a map reference or whatever where it was, and we did get away. And I remember we were seeing this truck in the distance, looking for us, and drew his attention by a mirror with the flashing. You know, we got his eye like that. And he came down, and we got up, and we got to.
Had you passed any scenes of previous fighting on
your
way up?
Not then. There had been none that far down, you see. And we went up and got as far as Mirza Matru, and there was a canteen there, a naffy. Went in the naffy, and of course you couldn't see for sand. It was blowing all over the place, and this is us just getting used to sand. And then we came up and then we all went in the boxes of the Ghazala. And
what was life like in the box?
Well, I had two lads, those three of us made a nice home for ourselves, you know, with sandbags and sand, and we made ourselves good beds. And you got your water ration, which was pint a day. But that was for drinking and for washing and shaving. Now, we had a sergeant. I got my own back on him later in life. He used to issue the water. Well, it poured into his paint pot. Well, it overflowed, didn't it? And it went into a tin. And he saved that. You got your water and you poured in your bottle. Well, if any waste went into his tin. Well, he had enough fresh water, he could nearly have a bath. He had a lot of funny things to do, you know. But we always had these regular soldiers, real first battalions and things like that.
What they call him?
Shall I say, Tommy Dawes. Well, I met him later in life. I went to Spenny World with a concert party, and he was concert chairman. And I told that very story from the stage. He put his arm round and he says, "Well, I looked after you and got back." And he took me and the wife into his house for supper that night. Tommy Dawes.
So you had your water ration, which had to wash you and drink.
Mm-hmm.
And you say you made yourself a comfortable place. By comfortable, what
do you
mean?
Well, you took a hole and you had your tent to put over the top, then you had to camouflage it, and you had sandbags. There was one bed down that way, one that, and one across the top.
Sandbag beds.
And we had the photographs of all of ones. I often wondered what to them, because I tell you that I wasn't there when it happened. So there was one of the biggest things we had to do was we had put lines to the forward companies and forward lines to the headquarters, and we bedded them up. But if anybody was going out at night, they used to pick the line up and carry it in the hand. So next morning we had to go straight out and dig it again. It was terrible. It went on and on and on. And they kept doing pick the lines up, you know, and because you could tell when it was fresh sand and things like that. And they used to go out on patrols. And there was little lad from Spenny Warning called Little Harry something. And he went on a patrol, come back. He says, I've been hit. Look, I've been shrapnel. He had a bit of shrapnel in his hand that cut his leg. And he was on the moon.
Did you go on any of these patrols or columns?
Not at that time. I wasn't on any at that time. And we had, he went, to, then word come that, it's come to, what do you, it's coming up to, early June, so many had to be sent left out of the battle. And I was one of them, got sent back to Sid Virani. And I went to Sid Virani, and here, that Sergeant Scott that put me in the signals, he was there, so naturally we were paddled up again. And the 50 Div band and orchestra was there in concert party. Now that was run by a man called Stringer Davis. Remember him? Who was he married to? The comedian Margaret Rutherford. He was married to Margaret Rutherford, and he was a great lad, and he wanted to volunteer to sing, and I went to sing for him. He says, that's smashing. Yeah. So, went to do a show, and I was a guest artist on the show. We're just going to start when word came about the fighting starting. So everybody had to, and we had been told where to go and guard the airstrip. Well, we went to guard the airstrip. We were at Sid Virani, which the guardship, and we had double this, and we just had rifles, you know, which was hopeless, you know. And we were there for 2 or 3 days. Then word come that we had to get out of it. And I think Harry, you had it, did you, Harry, from Chester Street? Told you about the trip when we got on this wagon. We had to find our way to Aluminium, so we hitchhiked this wagon. It was going down, and it was a Cypriot driving it. And he said, leave that alone, that box. So, and then we got strafed. we got strafed, so we all jumped clear of the wagon for a while till he went away. And here the Cypriot driver didn't come back, and he was dead. So Harry Lister, from the Chessy Street band. So we all got in, and Harry drove. And of course Harry says, you find out what's in that box. Lo and behold, there's a crate of beer. There's 24 bottles of beer. Can you imagine what the 7 of us done to that 24 bottles of beer? Because we landed in Alamein. And there's 50 Dave, he says, well, you're 2 days before you're due, yeah. So we got on quick, but we had a good start. So we missed that.
Can we come back to the box? to get a picture of the conditions in which you were living and working in. You had your dugout and your tent and so forth. What did you do for toiletries?
Well, we had the dug a hole. And we had petrol tins and a wooden seat put on top of them. And then there was also the spout called the Desert Rose. That was the Desert Rose, the spout, and you just went to the spout and they were 700 yards away from you. And we didn't do bad for food there, but we used to get a loaf for 7, I think it was about once a week coming up. And some lads could get 14 slices out of it, you know. And yeah. Harry Clasper, he was marvellous. He could get 14 slices. You all got 2 slices, you know. Seemed an awful lot when you got it that way. But it was biscuits you used to get then. And somebody said, well, the tea would taste better if we put biscuits in the tea in the big urn to soak the salt out. But when you get your tea, it looked like broth, you know. But it did. It took some of the salt away anyhow. And we had captured a patrol had captured a wagon load of dehydrated carrots, which we had never heard of anything dehydrated in them days, and that fed us for a long, long time. We also captured a load of women, anyway. We also captured a brothel on the patrols, that was for the Italians. But this cabaret, the carrots, it was fantastic. You got sick with it at the finish because you got too much, but it was there and it was filling.
So you had biscuits and you managed a loaf of bread. What other kind of food was normal?
The corned beef. You could say biscuits and corned beef was most things, you know. And I mean, give credit to you. I mean, the cooks used to try and make things better, you know. They made little pasties with the corned beef. There was one lad in particular, I think, was great big, like that plumber that was here this morning, big fat man, and he could turn little pasties out, and they tasted different. And every now and again, you had to take the sections looked after themselves. And this day it was my turn, and we had got I've just forgot the main meal, but a sweet was rice. I had a rice pudding. Well, there was a sandstorm come up. Could do nothing about it. And when the lads came for the meal, well, there was it, and the rice. And this lad, he says, well, at least the rice looks like my mother made it with a brown top. You know, because it looked as though you had put the butter on the top or whatever to make the brown top. Anyhow, so that was. And I think we did remarkably well. For all, it was plain, but I mean, some biscuits were better than others, and the local firms were very poor, tell you that. But there was, because there again, there was a bit distant up there, on sand flies and on sand sores. It was terrible, you know. Billy Whelan from Bishop Auckland, he got an awful lot of them. And they would tell me you couldn't get much, it was just salt water bandages you had to put on, and that was all. But then, of course, as I say, I can't say much of the main fighting because I wasn't there.
How did you cope with the flies? They were quite bad, I understand.
Bad, I don't. Well, you just had to put up with them. You know, as I say, they'd give you bites and you had a sore. You had straight away. They were like your open wounds.
Did they make eating and drinking difficult, flies?
Well, I think you ate the flies at the finish. And of course, the other black bugs were creeping around the floor and all, you know.
What was the health of the battalion like, all in all?
Well, I don't think it was too bad.
You said that you didn't receive any parcels. Were you getting any mail up?
Oh, the mail was quite, you know, that's where they started these photograph letters. Remember when we used to write them and they were reduced? And my mother and myself and my friends, we get them right like them. My mother thought they were marvellous. She couldn't, because naturally, she was me, she couldn't understand how they were getting, but they were just small letters, and but you could read them.
How important is mail to a soldier that's in a situation similar to what you were in?
Well, I think it's very important, very important. I mean, I was writing to people. I mean, the lad who gives them photographs. I wrote to him time and time again. And I was lucky to get one letter a year of him, but I used to, you were just writing. A Whig party. There was, as I say, the Springer Davis ran it, and there was two tenors in there. They were fantastic. And they had a lad dressed as a dame. He was brilliant, accordionist, good comic. They used to put very good entertainment, and I had seen them. I'd seen them in Dorset. I'd seen them in Iraq. Seen them in the desert. They were great, great artists. I think there must have been more several professionals, you know, but they were very good.
Were you able to move around freely in the box during daytime?
Well, you had to move around, but you had to watch for the Stukas. You know, you heard the noise, but you could walk around a bit, but you had to be very careful.
Were you much troubled by German aircraft?
We were there, because, I mean, up that time we hadn't seen much of the British aircraft, did it? I mean,
were they dropping bombs on you, the Stukas?
The Stukas were, they were dropping bombs. Well, I mean, they weren't dropping on them, but they were there. They were in the area, you know. Mm-hmm. Harry Richardson, the lad that went out from the, that brought the shrapnel back, Harry Richardson. And that's the one, he was in the same hole as me, same dunk. And so when I was away at the LOB when the fight started and they had to get out of that hole, well, I presume they just left all the photographs that I had, you know, and I don't know what happened to them since.
You mentioned that you had a concert party up. Did anyone else get up near you? Did the Salvation Army come up with any of their...
Salvation Army used to come up very regular. That's why I wouldn't have words said against the Salvation Army. They were there. They were there.
What did they bring? What was it they were doing?
Well, just something different. Delicacies. You know, biscuits and things like that. And I think they used to bring cigarettes and sweets. I'm sure they brought pop. I wouldn't like to swear on, but I think they brought something like that. But they were very, very good, this army. Well, church army then. It used to be... Yes, wherever I went, praise them. Must do.
Who was commanding the battalion in the desert?
Got me. No, I might say the wrong name.
Had you had any changes in officers yourself, in your own group?
Well, I said, Hulse was here, Hulse was captured there. And Polly Watson was the headquarter company. He was our company commander.
What was he like as a commander? You've mentioned the odd thing about him, but you know, as a day-by-day commander of the headquarter company, what was he like?
Well, what can you say? He's a command officer, you know, and then you have to show respect, you know. He wasn't a soldier. He never would be a soldier. A good Boy Scout. That's much as I would say. He was there. I all remember he did. He was there.
Do you still have the same NCOs that you'd had for some time?
Yes. Well, I told you my senior NCOs. You know, they had to be killed off. Yeah.
So you moved back prior to the German offensive against the Boers.
Yes. I was about 90 miles back.
So you, in effect, went back to Alamein with not the problems that the battalion
but
had.
But no. When we got back, we were told straight away they're coming here, and we started putting tents up. You know, we were told, they were coming in ribs and drabs after that.
Mm-hmm. What state were they in? Because it had a pretty rough time.
Oh, they had a pretty rough time.
What state were they in?
Very, very, was here shell shocked. You know, the world shell shocked. I mean, it was terrible. And I think one of the best things that pulled them together was while they were there, they started getting passes into Cairo and Alexandria. And that was, I think that did them marvellous. You know, it was a real break. You know, real break for them. They were in. They were sitting having a drink, and they all. I know that when we went in, the first thing you got was went in the bar and got a good shampoo and shave. You know, you're going to get more than that if you want it.
That was girls, of course.
Yes, they were cutting your hair. They wanted you to go upstairs with them. I mean, and we were just young lads. I mean, 22 of them were young lads, and I mean this Scotch lad. Sure, she's trying to get me upstairs. And I think we ran out of the shop. But we got my hair done. I think that didn't work, you know. And there was, all the time when out of the line, I think they were getting, I don't know how often they were getting, but it seemed that they were getting them quite often.
What was life like in Cairo and Alexandria? Did it strike you as... For example, there'd be lots and lots of soldiers who were back area people.
Mm-hmm.
You see much of them?
Yes, well, you walk around and, of course, you sit yourself, and then you can go on the beaches, which, you know, is beautiful again. And, the marketplaces, you know, and the Church of Scotland had a beautiful canteen there. You know, I remember that name sticks out, the Church of Scotland, but there was a lot of canteens in that, you know, from the Salvation Army and things like that.
Any troubles between yourselves and soldiers who weren't in any danger at all, or were in the back area and going to stay there?
No, the only fighting done backstage was whenever we met up with the 51st.
It was a great rivalry between
always, you. Always was. Always, you know, and I mean, when we landed, and going forward to D-Day, when we landed, and they were 6 days after, I think, did they land D6? They got a welcome off us. somebody said, put a sign up, 50 day welcome, 51st day. Didn't go down very well. all those rivalries.
What we are doing in the Alamein area prior to actually taking up a position on the line, while you were reforming and getting people.
Billy Kane, actually, I got my second charge. I got a charge for dirty knees. Going and guard with dirty knees. All spick and span. Going down towards the drill, and just as my lace was sticking beneath me putty, and I bent down to put the lace back under me putty, and I dirtied my knee, and I didn't know. And this officer inspecting, he says, "What's wrong with your knees?" I says, "Desert sores." He says, "They're sand sores, them." And I looked, "Keep your head up, on the charge." So that was another thing I got.
You were getting people coming in from to strengthen the battalion, new drafts. Where were they coming from?
Well, they came from all over. All different regiments. The lad I'm friendly with, over Beadles, who was the DR, and they came from the Lancashire regiments. And we had the Essex regiments, and we'd already had the Argyles. But I think the Argyle was the biggest, and, I mean, you know, you didn't know who you were going to get. So that was where the back then went into went to a small attack. I don't know if it was supposed to be a main attack, but it was a smaller one. We went into in the lane, went to an attack, and that was when we had nothing then.
Were you involved in this?
And I went in, as I said earlier. I went in with two flags. That's what I was going to use the signal with.
This would be the attack, was it? With the composite battalion made up of a number of people from the rest of the brigade.
Yes. Well, it was in August, wasn't it? It was in August, and there was Australians around us as well. And funny, the Australians always look older than us, and they looked real tough men, sort of thing. But I went in with these two flags, and this sergeant made a time. He says, "If you wave them flags around, I'll shoot you." What? I says, "That's nothing else to signal with." He says, "Well, you'll have to run because you're not going to wave them about." that was going in 1942, going into action with a flag. You know, to.
What are your memories of that particular action?